Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Audible is presented by Trader Joe's. Discover more about Trader Joe's by listening to their podcast, Inside Trader Joe's, available wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to the Audible presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Stuart Mandel, joined as always by Bruce Feldman. And Bruce, most of this episode probably we will be devoting to our top 25, our annual top 25 coach rankings, recently published on The Athletic. But first, you were at the Combine. What should we know? What were you up to there?
So it's a great opportunity if you cover college football like we do to network. There's tons of coaches and people around the sport. It's really the closest thing that the NFL gets to its own convention. Just pretty much everybody who works in the NFL is there. So that part is great. Indianapolis, even though it's probably not going to have it much longer, is an ideal city for it with its sky bridges and very accessible airport and all sorts of other reasons. And on Saturday, you know, we knew, like I did my freaks list story of guys in the draft, and there were four Georgia players all on the defensive side of the ball mentioned in the top 40. There could have been six. It was just an amazing showing. And N'Kobe Dean didn't even work out. I got to spend some time with N'Kobe Dean there just talking to him. But like, it was a remarkable to me, and there was a lot of freaky takeaways. I mean, this was kind of the freakless of all, you know, combines. I mean, to me, one of the guys we've been hyping from the freaks list for a year, Tariq Woolen from UTSA. I mean, he backed up the hype in a big way. Like, you know, hat tip to Jeff Traylor. He's the first person to really put him on my radar a year ago. But I mean, for a corner to be 6'4", 205 pounds, run 4.26, vertical jump 42 inches. I mean, I was DMing with Tariq Woolen a couple weeks ago for this story, and, you know, he exceeded even what he said he was going to do, which is almost never happens. Guys do that. And that was just the flip side of it is, from talking to some quarterback coaches in the league, the QB position, This is not a great group that's coming through at all, and so they struggled from the on-field workout, and that'll be interesting to see how those guys develop. But in terms of edge rushers and guys on defense, it's a loaded group. There's some really good O linemen. Our guy Ike Ekwonu ran in the mid 4.49s at 315 pounds from NC State. He definitely helped his stock even further, and I think it's going to be really interesting to see how these guys pan out.
First of all, I love how excited you get talking about somebody running a really fast 40 time.
Well, it's more than that. It's so many of these other, I mean, Aiden Hutchinson's 40 time relative to some of these other guys was not the wow one, but in his case, it's his change of direction, lateral quickness that is like, he ran faster than almost all the DBs and receivers there and running backs. I mean, at 6'6", 260 pounds, just, you know, amazing. Then you know, in some of the, you know, conversations you have with people, you talk about who impressed them or didn't impress them in interviews. And so you get a little bit of another slice into people's character and whatnot. And I'll have a story about, you know, kind of combine takeaways on The Athletic later this week.
I'm sure we'll talk more in the coming months about the quarterbacks, but it is interesting that it seemed like a underwhelming group going into last season, but like, okay, somebody will emerge. Desmond Ridder, Malik Willis, Matt Corral, Kenny Pitt, somebody will emerge as like the guy. Doesn't really seem like that happened. In fact, in some cases, they fell off, like Sam Howell. And now here we are in March, and still, like, I don't know that there's a single quarterback that you're like, yeah, that guy's a definite first-round guy.
No.
And that's weird, because usually there's a couple quarterbacks going right at the top of the draft.
Kenny Pickett, people liked. I think he did pretty well there. The question with him, and it depends on how much people value this, is he has, quote-unquote, small hands. They measured that. And so, you know, I don't know how people, you know, it's not like Joe Burrow has relatively small hands too, and Joe Burrow's fantastic. So, you know, then there's other guys. Like, I think people were hoping Carson Strong would wow them, you know, on the on-field workouts with his arm. That really didn't happen. I think it was almost like there was a disappointment in that. You know, I could see Matt Corral to me is a wild card in terms of, I think he does have a lot of ability, and I think I don't want to say he could be the boom or bust guy, but I think he could definitely, it would not surprise me if he turned out to be a really good NFL quarterback of this group. I think Kenny Pickett is, like, I'd be surprised if Kenny Pickett didn't end up doing nothing in the NFL. I don't know how good of an NFL quarterback he'd be, but I could definitely see him playing. Malik Willis didn't actually run, which a lot of people were hoping he would, just because he is such a dynamic athlete. But I think there's a decent amount of buzz inside the league on Malik Willis because of his talent. And so it's kind of a mixed bag. But I want to ask you this, because you and I are both admitted we totally whiffed on Josh Allen coming out of college. So can we play a little game now, or do you want to save it for later in the podcast? I'm going to throw some names at you, and I want you to be on record saying, I'm going to co-sign this guy, or I'm going to run from him.
Yeah, go for it.
All right. So I'm going to – and we got to set, like, parameters here, because you just can't be, like, a starter guy or whatever. But the first name I'm going to give you is somebody you mentioned a minute ago, and he's played a lot in college, and that's Sam Howell. Do you think Sam Howell will ever play in one Pro Bowl as a starting quarterback in the NFL?
Oh, wow. That's not where I thought we were going with this.
Oh, that's where we're going.
No, I don't think he will.
Okay.
Do you?
I don't think he will either. The only reason why, sometimes the Pro Bowl ends up like guys.
Yeah, you're using the Pro Bowl as the benchmark, but sometimes the quarterbacks in the Pro Bowl are just the guys who are willing to play.
I know, but it's like you, like, it's almost like, will you be better than Andy Dalton?
How about, will you be better than Andy Dalton? So that's the bar I should use. I'll use the Andy, like the Mendoza line here is Andy Dalton. Okay. Well, in that case, I don't know. I think Sam Howell can be Andy Dalton. He's right on the fence. What about you?
I'm going to say, yeah, that's where I am. That was my over-under. I don't know if he's going to be better than Andy Dalton. I think that's what he's going to be. The guy on the defensive player you think is the safest bet to go to at least five Pro Bowls or make All-Pro at least three times. All-Pro is harder distinction in his career.
Is it lack of originality to say Aiden Hutchinson?
No, that's a fine pick. I mean, everyone talks about his athleticism, his change of direction, his energy, his maturity. Yeah, I am going to take, and I wouldn't disagree with what you just said, but my safest bet for, I think, superstar in the NFL is N'Kobe Dean.
Interestingly, neither of us said, there are two names that I bet if we played this game before the season, we would have said before Aiden Hutchinson or N'Kobe Dean. Kayvon Thibodeau and Derek Stingley.
And both guys have some, like, both guys missed a bunch of time. So now,
yeah, that's the hesitation for
Derek
me.
Stingley was probably the best freshman on defense in 2019 when LSU had that great year. He impressed people in that program with, he went up against Ja'Marr Chase pretty much every day in practice and held his own. But he's a guy where there's definitely some question marks, at least some rumblings. And I've seen it on social media where, oh, he may fall out of the first round because he hasn't played much in the last 2 years. My hunch, and this is, again, people know who I know at LSU, but if Derek Stingley falls out of the first round, I have a feeling people will go, hey, remember when Derek Stingley fell out of the first round and now he made All-Pro? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I didn't realize falling out of the first round was a possibility. Yeah, I think both those guys are guys who, if they end up going to 10 Pro Bowls, you'd say, I saw that coming. And if they end up disappointing, you'd say, yeah, I saw that coming too. Hutchinson is in the middle. You know, I don't think he's the next Aaron Donald, but I would be surprised, very surprised, if 5 years from now he's considered a bust.
Okay. I'm going to give, who do you think will be the best running back? Running backs are so hard to predict in this. Who do you think will be the best running back of this group?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, doesn't it seem like with running back more than any other position, there's a kind of randomness to
there
who...
There is. There's absolutely that.
Not complete random, but there's just a lot of, you know, guys who weren't great NFL running backs and vice versa. You go first.
I am going to say Breece Hall, but Pierre Strong ran an exceptionally fast time. He is the running back out of South Dakota State who the Senior Bowl guys at mid-season thought he was probably the best senior running back prospect in the country. I would not sleep on
that. I think that's a great pick. You know, with Kenneth Walker, who's the obvious name here, it's like, okay, but I'm basing that off one season, right? He wasn't like he had a lot of these Alabama guys by the time, you know, Najee Harris or any number of Alabama running backs, by the time they get to the draft, you've seen them, a lot of them. All right, I'll throw this one out there. I'm going to go with Isaiah Spiller, in part because he's so versatile. I could see a NFL team using him a lot of different ways. And I've just seen him be very productive for 3 years. It does seem, as I'm looking at the list of top running backs, a lot of these guys are kind of one-hit wonders. So Breece Hall is not, and Isaiah Spiller is not. Like, I could see James Cook, right, who just had a big playoff run and was at Georgia for 4 years, become an NFL star. But the college samples, like his actual production in college really was, you know, very hit or miss up until the end.
Yeah, they had three backs that were rotated in. I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not going to say he's going to be Tyreek Hill or one of these guys who's with the Rams or with the Chiefs who ends up being a real matchup nightmare. But I will say this. James Cook's name came up two different times with coaches I talked to about interviews that they really liked him. And I remember when he was coming out of high school, and maybe it was some stuff from around the opening, I think people wondered about, like, maturity-wise. And it seems like he's in a really good place. People liked him. He is a dynamic guy in space. Obviously, he's not a huge running back, but he's one that really seemed I'm with you on that, I guess. I want to ask you about one other player, and then we will move on. So when people do these winners and losers of the combine weekend, and it usually comes down to, do they run slower than expected or not? There is a player, and I feel like I'm setting you up for this the same as for me. There's a receiver who ran a 4.65 40 with a pretty slow 10-yard split. It was 1.62, which is basically the same thing Aiden Hutchinson and David Ajabo ran and a few other guys. His vertical jump was 33 inches, sub 10-foot broad. These are all numbers that probably...
sounds like a nightmare combine showing.
Yes. This player was a receiver and ate up a lot of people in the Big Ten. He is 6'1", 212-pound David Bell.
See, that's interesting. Why did he have such a bad combine? I wouldn't bet against David Bell. I've seen him have too many big games against... It seems like some of his best performances came in Purdue's biggest games.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, his shuttle time was also really mediocre. I mean, it was almost 4.60, which is not good for almost anybody. That's, you know. So I am inclined to think David Bell was going to be really productive for a lot of the same stuff. He just makes plays. You know, the only hesitation I had was, you remember their Purdue's bowl game, right?
Yeah, he didn't play.
Brock Thompson, Ryan Thompson's son, who was like hobbling around, it seemed like all the time, but making plays, you know, he would like make a big catch and I was just like, I don't know, maybe it's a Brom offense thing where these receivers just jump in and they become playmakers. But I'm inclined to say if somebody gets David Bell in the fourth round or something, I could see him ended up being a very productive third down receiver.
I'm curious what Hunter Renfro is. I'm trying to figure this out.
Combine. I know Renfro ran like a 4.59 40 or something.
Like, because that's what it reminds me of. Like a guy who's not going to wow you with his measurables, but like he's a really good receiver.
But Hunter Renfro is also like 30 pounds lighter than David Bell too. They're kind of different in that regard. It's just I think people were hoping he would run 4.55 instead of it's the other numbers. It's not just the 40 time. Sometimes it's the shuttle times that people kind of hold on to. Like that 4.57 shuttle. Some of those guys with the Patriots, like Edelman, I think, and Deion Branch, they were like 3.9s, 3.8s. And, you know, like if you're talking about a receiver who gets in and out of breaks, I think those are numbers that a lot of times NFL personnel people really grasp at.
I'm glad you got to, I know it's your favorite time of year. And you know, now mine's coming up, you know, a week from Thursday, the NCAA tournament will tip off. And you will see me be as giddy, if not more so, than you are about the NFL.
Your favorite, you run a college football podcast, and your favorite time of the year involves
basketball. Yes, I've always said my favorite sports season is college football. My favorite event is March Madness, and I've watched less college basketball this year. I feel like I say this every year. I've watched less college basketball than any point in my life, but that's really true. I watched the whole Duke UNC Coach K game, and was maybe the second or third full college basketball game I've watched all year. But I will be at rapt attention on Sunday for the brackets and from there on.
I have watched a decent amount of college hoops. I did not get to see that game because I think I was flying home from Indy. But
it was really interesting to watch the whole scene. Like, they just kept cutting, you know, and you would appreciate this because you know, Coach K's, you're a little older than me, but Coach K's tenure kind of matches exactly how long I've been into college basketball. Well, no, 1980, I wasn't watching college basketball yet, but, you know, 85, 86, when he first started getting going. And so there's this whole section of former Duke players, and every time they cut to the crowd, it's like a who's who of guys who played for Coach K. Oh, there's Shane Battier. There's Christian Laettner. There's Cherokee Parks. That was more interesting than the game itself, even though the game was a great game that went right down to the end. But yeah, that was a fun 2 hours.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
If you go to The Athletic, it's a sports website that Bruce and I both write for, that you can subscribe to for $1 a month. It's called this. It's the promo code is theathletic.com/theaudible. Once a year, we both rank the top 25 coaches in college football. Most years we are in deep disagreement. This year, our top 10s are actually like almost identical. Not much to debate there. Let's see here. We have, I had yours pulled up and then I lost it.
So our first three are definitely identical. Nick Saban, one, duh. Dabo Sweeney, two. Kirby Smart has moved up.
I know there was like at least 2 years of agreement there. Kirby, and where I had Kirby and Lincoln Riley right next to each other, and should I have them reversed? And yeah.
I definitely had.
Yeah, I think this is the first year I've had Kirby higher. Yeah. Now he's 4 spots higher, but you know, he just won the national championship. He's had an incredible run so far. That did not take much thought.
Our next three in some order is Ryan, yep. Day, Brian Kelly, Lincoln.
We both, Riley. Kyle Whittingham soared up the charts for both of us. I think we've always respected him and I think I've always had him on this list somewhere. But last year he finally got over the hump and won the Pac-12. What's interesting when you do these lists is, I mean, just last year I had two guys in the top 10, Ed Orgeron and Dan Mullen, who have been fired. I mean, Gary Patterson was a mainstay in my top 10. He was fired. You know, it changes over fast, right, beyond the first few. And so I kind of felt like after I got past six, which is where Riley is where things started to fluctuate quite a bit from, or you know, change over quite a bit from last year. And I was like, yeah, why wouldn't I have Kyle Whittingham here? There's no one else who, I mean, I guess you could argue for Jimbo. I guess you could argue for Luke Fickell, but he's just had such a consistent run for so long now.
Okay, so I need to chime in a little. So I actually have Jimbo number seven, and then I had Kyle Whittingham number eight. I'm not going to quibble with you having seven. For me, what, you know, and I've always been a big believer, especially since I've been doing sideline, because you get to see that team in person and how physical they are in games, and it just makes you that much more impressed by them consistently. But given the adversity that they had with the multiple tragedies off the field and all sorts of challenges, and the way he got it on track and kept it on track, they finished number 12. I mean, he's done an amazing job there, and that's why I had him where I, you know, had him eight. Jimbo's interesting to me because of these guys on this list. Once you get past number three, you know, Brian Kelly left Notre Dame in large part. He hadn't won a national title. He's done terrific work, but he hasn't done that. Ryan Day, shorter run, but obviously hasn't done that either. And Lincoln Riley, the same. And Jimbo's there. He does have a ring. Did you hesitate at all on putting him where you had him, or because you have him at number nine behind Kyle Whittingham and Lincoln?
And I had him number seven last year. I mean, they didn't have a great season this past year. And as you know, I based a lot on recent performance.
Right.
So now I saw him as a top 10 coach. He did just recruit the number one class in the country. He's only a year removed from they finished fourth in the country. So there's a lot to like there. But no, I don't. I think Texas A&M fans put him in the same category as our top three. I'm not there yet. And we'll see if he can lead A&M to the promised land, as everybody there is certainly expecting. Our first big disagreement is the same one we've had for several years now. It just seems like the disparity grows by the year. You have James Franklin number nine in the country,
and I moved him down quite a bit.
And I have him barely hanging on at 22, down from 17 last year. It's funny, we have three drastically different opinions of James Franklin on this podcast. You saw him as top 10 coach, even after four and five seasons in the Big Ten. I have him low top 25, and our producer, John Hayes, is a Penn State fan who wanted him fired last year. So, all over the map.
All right, John, explain yourself. Why do you hate him so much?
Yeah.
I was going to say, is this an opening for me? The situation is clearly this, is that if you look at James Franklin, he can build a program, right? And he's done it well. And he's recruited well. He's the best recruiter in the history of Penn State football, right? I'll give him that. But in big games, time after time after time again, Penn State just falls short. It's expected now to lose to Ohio State. You win the Big Ten title in the first couple seasons, and you feel like a generational player in Saquon Barkley is going to take this program to the next level. And it didn't happen. And the quarterback position, we know, Trace McSorley, a diamond in the rough, gets replaced by Sean Clifford, two guys that are, quite frankly, average at best quarterbacks. He needs to find somebody.
Wait, you think Trace McSorley was an average college quarterback?
Talking about from his recruiting process to get on Penn State's campus. It's not like he was somebody that was a five-star coming out of high school that Franklin got over an Ohio State program or any other program in the country. He was a great project that Franklin brought on campus. And he turned out really good. And by the way, he wouldn't have been as good if Saquon Barkley wasn't standing next to him in the backfield. So for me, the problem is, and remember, I'm a Penn State graduate, I'm a Penn State fan. Sean Clifford coming back for his fifth year at Penn State, I promise you, that's worst case scenario for every Penn State fan out there.
Well, you're hoping that your new freshman quarterback takes over, I'm sure.
And he was a five-star guy, yeah. Right?
By the end, I think he was. He started out under the radar.
He's definitely a five-star quarterback. I saw him at Elite 11. He's, you know, a huge guy with a lot of people were interested in him. He was a five-star quarterback. I used to
you know, kind of downplay what you were saying about the big games, John, and, you know, you got to assess the – but what's more troubling to me is, I mean, the program's just has been heading in the wrong direction. I gave him this new big contract, and recruiting is on the uptick, but it just feels like they've been heading in the wrong direction for several years now. And now it's not just about, well, he made a poor decision in a game here or there. It's, why can't you figure out your offense?
I'll give you this as my final fan take on the show of the day. It's that at the end of last year, I was texting some buddies, and I was saying to myself, yeah, like it seems like Franklin is doing a great job on the trail, but the record, especially the last two seasons, and I'll throw out the pandemic year. I've got no problem with that. But especially even last year, did not reach expectations. Penn State was not even the best program in its state last year. It was Pittsburgh doing that.
Does that hurt to say that?
Yes, it does, Bruce. And it's for a program that says unrivaled as its mantra, Pittsburgh is the rival. And Pittsburgh was a better program than Penn State last year. And that's a problem for sure.
By the way, Pittsburgh is not, and I can say this as a son of a former Temple football player, Pitt football has amazing history. They, yes. By the way, have produced the best player in the NFL.
Well, they used to be like rivals, real rivals, like similar programs in the 70s and 80s, but man, it's been a long time.
But I mean, even before that, Pitt has like legendary players who've come through that program. So anyway, here's my thing on Franklin, and this is, I get it where you guys are coming from. They've had two dud years in a row. But when you say it's going in the wrong direction, as we said, you just got a five-star quarterback. They had the class that was ranked number six in the country. I mean, that is a pretty – it's not like recruiting has fallen off the map now.
Year before, he had an uncharacteristically bad recruiting class. But this – the one last year was great, and now he's off to a great start in 2023.
Yeah. I mean, so we'll see where this is. I mean, again – and we've had this conversation and this discussion for as long as Stu and I have been doing this, dueling top 25s. I mean, I factor in Stu. I think it doesn't matter that he had coached at Vanderbilt before. Stu is over that, right? That doesn't matter at all to you.
I mean, it's almost 10 years ago at this point. So it's
I know. I mean, here's how I look at it is, I look at body of work. I cannot take out, like, what he did. If you were to say, and this is maybe a different conversation, but to me it's not. If you were to say, in the last, since we both have covered college football, what are the 10 most impressive coaching jobs anyone's done in college football? What James Franklin did at Vanderbilt is going to be probably in the top three for me.
All right, counterpoint. Again, you know, this is
you
where
you disagree with that or no?
No. It was great, but it was a long time ago now. Like, this is the single biggest difference in how we approach these rankings is I put it, I would say 80%, if it was a mathematical formula, the last four seasons or so are probably account for like 80% of my rating. Cause it's top 25 coaches right now. If you're going to hang on to what they did
but
in
if
the past.
That, but if that's the case, Stu, you wouldn't even have Jimbo Fisher in your top 10.
No,
because let me tell you this, and because I remember this from after Jimbo Fisher's record in the last 4 years, I think is worse than Ed Ogeron's record is in the last 4 years.
But he's just a year removed. If he didn't have the top 10 season 2 years ago, yeah, he wouldn't be in my top 10. So what's the difference between what you're saying with Franklin, right? So he was at Vanderbilt. His last season at Vanderbilt was 2013. What's the difference between him and David Shaw, who neither of us have in here anymore, and how could you justify that, right? But if you're going back to 2013, I mean, he won three Pac-12 titles in 4 years.
I can tell you what the difference is on that.
Yeah.
David Shaw and I think David Shaw is a really good coach, but David Shaw took over from Jim Harbaugh of a team that had just won a BCS Bowl and was top four in the country. Jim Harbaugh turned that thing from a non-factor into one of the most physical programs in the country.
Yeah.
Jim Harbaugh did that at Stanford. That's what David Shaw took over. What he took over at Vanderbilt was abysmal. And then what has been after he left has continued to be abysmal. What he took over at Penn State was a program that was off the national, was not nationally relevant, and then they ended up having 3-11 win seasons. And by the way, I mean, they are in a tough division. Again, I'm not saying James Franklin is a top five coach. I'm not having that argument. I'll give you, the last couple of years have been very disappointing. I am saying, though, that I factor in, you know, when I think of coaches, I don't, and I'm not saying you entirely dismiss it, but like some of that is significant to me of where, what they did in their career, because it also, by the way, it's like, it's still, you know, it's not like they completely forget how to coach. We're not talking about, you know, something, this isn't a Les Miles situation, I guess.
No, it's not. In fact, it's, again, it's only been, I mean, there's a reason I still have him in there. 2019 is not that long ago, and he won 11 games. So,
I mean, can I bring up something to you here, like on your list? And I'm going to jump ahead, but just for this purpose, and then we can jump back in. So you actually have James Franklin four spots below Paul Chryst. And Paul Chryst is on my list as well. But Paul Chryst, the last 2 years, has not had, you know, it hasn't been great for him either. They're 9-6 in Big Ten play, and they're on the easy side. They're on the easier side, and he doesn't have anywhere near the body of work that James Franklin had. And you have him four spots below.
So Paul Chryst, 10-3 at Wisconsin, 10-3, 11-3, 13-1, 8-5, 10-4. With a near, you know,
I know, but
last second loss in the Rose Bowl, and then 4-3 in the COVID year, and 9-4 this past year, where again, they started off 1-3 and then had a chance to.
They were still 1-3. I don't say they started off like.
Well,
whatever.
But what do you do there? They I thought they might free fall from there, and instead, I think they won.
I'm
eight
just
in a
saying,
row.
you're seven in a row. Franklin, who has gone 8-10 the last 2 years in the Big Ten. He's 9-6. It's definitely better, but it's also they're in the easy side of the conference.
I think you just answered the question.
No, I don't think
I did. 9-6 and 8-10. One of them's a winning record, and one of them's a losing record.
One of them's again, they're not. It's not apples to apples here. You're not playing Ohio State. You're not playing Michigan over there. You're playing pretty much mediocre programs, especially if you're Wisconsin. You're the top of that. That's all I'm saying. And you have him four spots ahead. And their comparison, look at what he did. One guy did at Pitt compared to what one guy did at Vandy.
I'll be honest. I don't think that I, in the course of doing this, ever like put Paul Chryst and James Franklin next to each other, like the selection committee would in the ranking teams, you know. I was cognizant of him and PJ Fleck, who I have very close together. And also just like I did drop Paul Chryst four spots, so I wasn't. It wasn't like the drop-off the last 2 years went unnoticed.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I think the biggest one where you really hang on to the good old days and say, oh, the guy hasn't forgotten how to coach, and I look at the past 4 years and go, yeah, I can't justify this, is Chip Kelly. It never even entered my mind to put listener of the Audible, Chip Kelly, in the top 25 coaches, just because, you know, he's been at UCLA for 4 years now, and the best season he's had so far last year was still an 8-win season. You have him as one of the top 20 coaches.
I do, because if you look at his record, he is 64-32 overall. He was 46-7 at Oregon. And people can say, okay, that was a long time ago. I mean, it took them a while to turn around UCLA, but he was 8-4 last year. That's not a terrible year or anything like that. It feels like they have finally turned the corner there. And again, I think when you look at his record in total, you have guys above where I have them who've had like two strong seasons. You didn't even have him in just missed the cut, and you have Dave Aranda there. I love Dave Aranda. Dave Aranda's had one winning season. You had Mel Tucker. Mel Tucker's had three seasons. Two have been losing seasons. He's had 1 year.
Well, that's why they're in just missed, not in the top
25. I know,
25.
But you didn't even have a guy who went 46-7 and 33-3 in the Big
Ten. I mean, just kind of like also, what you said with Franklin and Vanderbilt. Like, Chip Kelly, if you were judging him just on his Oregon tenure, that's a top 25 all-time coaching era, although it was only 4 years. But, I mean, 2012 was his last season. We're a decade removed from that now. I got to judge it by the UCLA, and he's 18-25. And by the way, it's not, you know, UCLA is not Alabama, but it's also not, I mean, Jim Mora won 10 games back-to-back seasons there. It's not impossible to do better than 8-4.
He wasn't winning them at the end. I mean, look at what that program was.
I'm saying 8-4, and you're like, he's got it heading in the right direction now, but it's taken a long time. And I don't know. I just, I think, you know, for you to have him in the top 25 is basically almost entirely off what he did at Oregon, right?
No, I think it's also, look, there's a couple of guys. Look, I had Leach and just missed the cut. I don't think you can completely disregard what guys did or at earlier stops in their career, because I do think it's reflective of what they can do once they get entrenched there. I mean, you have Lane Kiffin, number 11, right? Lane Kiffin, you want to talk about the last 4 years. I mean, yes, he had a good year last year. The year before that, he was 4-5 in the SEC, and
that was his first season.
Coach.
Doesn't every coach in America get a pass for their first season? And by the way, even in his first season, taking over Ole Miss with a terrible, terrible defense, they beat Indiana, the best Indiana team in history, possibly, in a New Year's bowl game. I mean, to me, Lane
has been a head coach for 10 years. You know how many times they finished ranked in the top 25 in those 10 years? I'm sorry, it's actually 11 years.
I do, because I have his record in front of me.
Twice in 11 years.
Well, you have to judge them based on where they are at that time. And so his FAU teams were not going to get ranked.
But 10 years. I'm sorry, it's 10 years.
Since, and again, it's interesting, though, because with, again, like kind of like how you're holding on to Oregon with Chip and Vanderbilt with James Franklin, you're probably still docking Kiffin for USC, which admittedly was not a good coaching job. But since coming out of the Saban rehab project, he has been a college head coach for 5 seasons, in which he went 11-3 and won a conference title at a school that had never won a conference title. 5-7, 10-3, another conference title. Goes to Ole Miss, 5-5 the first year. Last year, 10-3 and a New Year's Six bowl game. And I think you would agree at this point has pretty much, it's pretty widely held, right, that he's one of the top offensive coaches in the sport.
I have him on my list. My point, though, is you have a guy who in 10 years, and it's like, yes, USC was dealing with sanctions. USC, when he got there, still had a lot of players, a lot of really good talent there.
USC, I look at him and it's almost like two separate coaches. I think he was a very immature, very ill-prepared coach when he took over at Tennessee and USC. And then he went through the Saban period, and he came out of it a much better head coach.
I think some of it here, like Conference USA is right now, I think we'd agree, is probably the weakest of all the FBS conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost like, okay, and I don't like if it wasn't for last year, for Ole Miss, like you had him pretty high on your list last year, though.
No, right? I had him 20. He was the big rise, one of the big risers. Like, he went from 24th to 11th.
It
sounds like what you're saying is winning Conference USA should not count as anything.
No, I'm just not that swayed by that particular, you know.
It's not like he won Conference USA with Ole Miss's players. Like he had the best team in that conference that he happened to be in at the time 2 times in 3 years. It's kind of like Lance, I have Lance Leipold on here.
Lance Leipold also won 63.
He won D3 national title. To me, it's a good sign when you do it at multiple levels. He won at D3. He won in the MAC. It's too early to say whether he'll win in the Big 12. I look at it as, because look, there's been a group of five coaches who had great success and then did nothing at the Power 5 level. But the ones who do prove that they can do it at multiple levels, like to me, that's the sign of a good coach. Like PJ Fleck has done, I think he's well on his way to showing that. I think Cristobal is well on his way to showing that, you know, you can, that you can win both group of five and Power 5.
Okay. So
is that my biggest, I mentioned, I thought Chip was your biggest, most puzzling one was Lane Kiffin at 11. What you thought was my most puzzling?
Lane Kiffin 11 is probably the most puzzling one. Again, I have Lane on my, where do I have Lane? I want to say I have him in the high teens. I have Lane 17. I think beyond that one, you have Monken 10, which I think is pretty high.
Yeah, we have a pretty big disparity there. I have him 10 and you have him 24th. Wow. Yeah, that's big. I think you're forgetting how god-awful Army was. World War II, basically, and when he became the coach.
I'm not. I mean, I have him in my top 25. I just think some of these... I don't know. You have Bill. You always have Bill.
I think
Clark
you
really
have.
High.
I'm starting to pick this up. You just do. You just do not care about outside the Power Five. Unless they're doing it at the Power Five, you just completely downplay it.
No, I don't. It's not entirely true. I definitely put more stock in who they're playing consistently in that, because look, I have Freeze 19. He's obviously not at a Power Five program right now. I think he would be my highest. Freeze is 19. I have Lance Leipold at Kansas 23, Monken 24, Kalani Sitake 25.
I just think Jeff Munkin's a heck of a coach. He took Georgia Southern to three FCS semifinals. He gets to Army, which hasn't been good in fit. I mean, they had like one really good season in 1996. And then I believe they only had one winning season between 96 and when he took over in 2014. He has two bad years to start. And then since then, 8-5, 10-3, 11-2, 5-8 down year in 2019, 9-3, 9-4, beat an SEC team in a bowl game last year. Remember, he basically got Major Applewhite fired at Houston because they beat them so badly in that bowl game that year. He's a really good coach.
Let's see. The one guy you have on your list that I don't, Bill Clark.
Yeah, you've been downplaying that for years too. Now we are a little far removed at this point. I just thought when UAB got shut down for 2 years and they came back and he had them immediately in a bowl game and won a conference title. I mean, I think I had him in the top 10 or close to it.
I think you had him like four.
So it's it's settled down a little bit since then, but even in a quote-unquote down year last year, UAB went 9-4 and beat Kalani Sitake's 13th-ranked BYU team in a bowl game. You have him, what, others receiving votes?
I don't even know if I maybe? I don't know if I don't have that in front of me. I do not. Oh, no, I do. Yes, of course I do. So the guys we mentioned, I'm surprised you did not have Leach and others receiving votes, at least. Now, full disclosure, people know I wrote a book with him, but man, like what the guy did at Texas Tech, what he did at Washington State, and it's not like he's not awful so far taking over Mississippi State.
I could be wrong, but I think we were past Mike Leach's peak at this point. I think we are seeing him on the kind of downward slope a little bit. They were decent last year. In fact, they beat A&M. But, you know, he had that great 2018 season at Washington State with Gardner Minshew. And then he went 6-7. And then he got the Mississippi State job and went 4-7 the first year and 7-6. Oh, for some reason in my head, I thought they were 8-4 last year. 7-6. I guess I could have put him in there. I mean, I never seriously considered actually having him I thought maybe I'd sneak him in at the end, but I never thought about having him like solidly in the top 25. And apparently, I mean, I don't know why this is a debate. He missed your cut too.
Yeah. I mean, I thought of getting him in there just, but I ultimately did not, because I think it would have come at the expense of, you know, Monk and Satake at the end.
Let's talk about two guys in the same division who I, at least, really struggled with what to do this year, even though they are mainstays. Kirk Ferentz and Pat Fitzgerald. Kirk Ferentz won 10 games last year. It's not, you know, it's we're not talking about somebody whose program has free-fallen by any means. But, you know, I mean, there was a little bit of luck, a little bit of turnover luck involved in their hot start last year, and they were just... In fact, they finished in the top 25 4 years in a row. So I guess what I'm saying is I felt like he has to be in there, but I felt a little bit icky about it because their offense is so terrible, and he won't fire his son, obviously, as the OC. So it's kind of like that's the sign of bad program management when you're putting your family over the, you know, health of the program.
I mean, he's 35 and 13 the last 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, it's hard to argue with the results.
I mean, I'm surprised you didn't have him a little higher. I know you have history of not always looking favorably on him.
Yeah, you have him 18th.
You know, factored into it.
I mean, I think earlier in his tenure, like early 2010s, they got kind of mediocre. They've actually been pretty good. Like I said, top 25 4 years in a row. I do think there's a little frustration from Iowa fans that there were a couple opportunities where they could have been even better and blew games. And last year, I mean, if they had even a mediocre offense, I mean, they still won the Big Ten West. Obviously, they got blown out, and they had no offense to speak of. I think it was in the 120s. So, and yet they went 7-2 in the Big Ten.
I mean, they have been better in the last 4 years. They've actually been better than Wisconsin.
I think you're right about that. Okay.
No, I am right. I did the math.
And then Pat Fitzgerald. Who, again, has usually been a mainstay on this list and is only a year removed from... And he's been the Northwestern's coach since 2006, and his best season was the COVID 2020 season when they finished 10th in the country. But that was sandwiched between not one but two 3-9 seasons, 1-8 in the Big Ten. Last year they were truly, truly awful, and so I just did not think I could justify putting him in there anymore, and apparently you had the same... You reached the same decision.
Yeah, a couple of 1-8 years in the, and again, they're on the easier side of the conference. Yeah, there was a really, you know, strong year in the COVID 2020 season. You know, I think he's a really good coach, and for me, obviously, I'm more looking at big picture than I think you do with this. But I don't know. It's tough to keep the list of 25. I mean, I don't know how else to say.
Yeah, if you're looking at the bigger picture, he's had a tremendous tenure there. There's no question. I mean, three 10-win seasons since 2012, two Big Ten West titles, including in 2020. And you remember they were very competitive in that game against Ohio State and Justin Fields. But there's a lot going wrong with that program right now. You know, I remember I was on the Fire McCall cause a couple years ago, but they did change OCs and they were still abysmal on offense last season. They just haven't recruited at quarterback and receiver. So yeah, hard to say top 25 coach.
I feel like there's one you should be like, and again, there's two guys I think I have a little higher than you do. And I'm curious where you are with this. And it is, Dave Clawson and Matt Campbell.
I was a little surprised when I realized that I didn't have Dave Clawson ranked at all last year. And probably that probably means I've never had him ranked. Obviously, they have the big... he's been taking them to bowl games, which is no small thing. But they had their big breakout year last year, an 11-1 season. I think he's a great coach. I think he's a very innovative offensive coach. The slow mesh is a extremely fun concept to watch. So, I don't know. I didn't think it was all that controversial. I have him 15th. Where do you have him?
I have him 11.
So, we're not even that different, are we?
No, not too much. I just feel like what he's been able to do there you know, it's Wake Forest. And I'm just knowing that people thought, oh, it's a really experienced team. They won 11-3 and were 14 in the country. I think the expectations there are they should be, you know, maybe as good this year. And he has done it. Again, I feel like a broken record talking about previous jobs, but he did, you know, really amazing work at Fordham, at Richmond, and then at Bowling Green. And he's produced a lot of really good coaches. He's got his fingerprints on kind of their careers in the past as they've had some upward mobility. So to me, you know, he was really like a guy that I just think that just doesn't get enough credit, you know, more than anything.
So for years, you've given me flack about not having Jim Harbaugh in the rankings at all. And then coming off his big season last year, the Big Ten title, beating Ohio State, he has entered my list at, or I shouldn't say entered, returned after a couple of years absence at 13, and we arrived at pretty much the same point. You have him 12. But explain then, you're the world's biggest Jim Harbaugh fan, and you have him behind Clawson.
Whoa. I am not the world's biggest Jim Harbaugh fan.
Well, you've been pushing him for
sure. I've been pushing him because, again, I look at, you know, again, I look at what he did at Stanford, which, as you agree, you live out there, and I don't know if you did at the time, but you remember how awful Stanford football was.
No, you don't have to remind me of all that. I'm just asking, like, here I finally gave him the recognition you think he deserves, and you're like, well, why don't you have Dave Clawson hire? I mean, Harbaugh's at least.
No, I would say, why didn't you have Dave Clawson maybe higher than, who did you have? There was the one. Why didn't you have Dave Clawson higher than, you
know, Mark Stoops?
Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, well, we've gone over that. I could maybe flip him and Mark Stoops, but like, it gets tough when you're, first of all, it's not apples to apples when you're comparing the coach of Michigan to the coach of Wake Forest. But Harbaugh's had other double-digit win seasons there. This was the first for Wake. As for Matt Campbell, I mean, I've been very, very high on him, and I still am. But last season was a dud, and frankly, two of the last three seasons were kind of duds, and I just didn't think I could justify. I had him 10th last year, and I didn't think I could justify that anymore. He dropped to 16th. You have him 13th, so not that different.
Yeah, I dropped him down some, as you said. I mean, look, they rarely had gotten to seven wins in that school's history, and they've had five in a row. But again, the high water mark was the 2020 season. They finished 9th. That's the highest the school's ever finished. I think if they had gotten to 9 wins again, even though it probably would have been a little, in my eyes, a little disappointing, I still think, you know, I think he's, this is where I struggle with this list a little bit. If you ask me and not stare at their wins and losses record, but what I feel like what they do for the program, I would probably say, like, I'm trying to frame this in a certain way, which would be, if Jim Harbaugh left and Matt Campbell got the Michigan job, and this is maybe a different conversation, or maybe it's not, but if you said to me, after the top six on both our lists, because they are the same, said, who off this list, if they got the Michigan job, do I think would be a great hire? I think Matt Campbell might have been one of my first choice. In fact, I'm...
So then it makes sense to have him basically almost tied with Harbaugh.
Or it makes, you know, like, it was somewhere in that range. I'm just saying, like, I guess I look at this sometimes, you know, where it is, and look, Mario is a unique fit. I mean, nobody on this list with the possible... Let me see about this. If you said to me, and again, I feel like I'm starting fires left and right here, but if you said to me, not Nick Saban, and Miami is going to hire one guy on this list, Mario Cristobal would be that one.
Yeah, that's a perfect fit type situation.
Yeah.
And in fact, I had to try to not, because he hasn't coached a game there yet, to just remember to base his ranking solely on what he's done up to this point. Did you ever at any point, I meant to mention this when you were grilling me on Lane Kiffin, when you were doing this, and because look, it's not, there's no science behind why one guy is 11th and one's 13th. Did you ever find yourself, because I did with Kiffin, just being like, you know what, between these two guys, I just have more confidence in, because that's kind of how Kiffin moved up a little bit on my list. I was like, well, I could have Harbaugh ahead of him, but if you're starting a team and you're giving me the choice, I just have more confidence in Kiffin. I just have more confidence in Mike Gundy. I'm saying, like, beyond the records and the stats, a little bit of a gut feeling.
I think I don't look at it that way. I look at try to see what they factor into, what else they've done for their program, what else they've done. I mean, it's hard for me to operate just in a vacuum, like I said, with Leach, because he has been such a, you know, had his role in innovation in such a big way. It's hard for me to look at Chip Kelly in that way without also the same, because I know how much of his fingerprints are on the rest of the sport. Like when you talked about Lane, I think Lane's a really good play caller, even though he wasn't doing it last year. You know, Chip Kelly's one of the best game planners in college football. Like, he's one of the best offensive minds. Like, I'm not sure there's anybody on this list, probably Lincoln included, who I would say is probably, you know, a brighter offensive mind. You know, I mean, but the same token, I mean, I don't think people look at Dabo or Jim Harbaugh that way, but those guys are very, very successful head coaches, because there's so much that goes into it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we talk about Dave Clawson and the slow mesh, and he obviously deserves a ton of credit for it, but it's like, obviously, you know, Warren Ruggiero, who's the OC there, he's kind of the architect behind it. So, I mean, I think there's so many kind of layers to this where you can come at it. But when you said, you know, when you're talking about, like, do I think just who do I have a lot more confidence in? Like, it's hard for, like, I get why you say it, but I'm also looking at it as you have, like, a handful of guys on here who are deserving, but they're also, like, it's almost like they're coaching in some ways at a different sport than Nick Saban and Kirby Smart and Dabo Sweeney are. You know what I mean?
That's why it's hard to do. I mean, you know, I remember,
like, you have Bill Clark. You have Bill Clark, who has done a really good job there at UAB. But it's like, in a lot of times, like, for especially the Conference USA schools, it's like it's just so much different than what they're working with compared to the top end of the Power Five.
I think it's very hard to compare a group of five and a Power Five coach head to head. But I also think it's actually easier for me to say, because, you know, it's the age old argument, right? Is it the coach or is it the players? Or is it more the coach or more the players? Like, we both have Ryan Day very high. But, you know, like, every Ohio State coach seems to do very well. How much of it is him and how much of it is the school and the
and look, he took
the
over,
access
he
to talent.
He took over for Urban, and he kept the best parts of Urban's program. Just like, honestly, Lincoln took over for Bob, and he took a lot of the best parts of that. And so they were kind of – there was an incubation process. I mean, I still think those guys, like you do, I still think those guys are top five coaches or top six coaches, I guess. But there is a different dynamic at play than who did you take over and how much of a rebuild do you have to do?
And that's why, for me, I think it's easy for me to say that Jeff Monken's a really good coach or Bill Clark is a really good coach, because in that case, it is absolutely not the program. If anything, they are having to overcome the place where they're at. Bill Clark gets there and the school shuts down his program for 2 years. So that's coaching, that they're as successful as they are. It's Monken is why Army's as successful as they are. There's no, like, well, is it just because they always get good recruits no matter who the coach is? Like, to me, it's easier to identify Lance Leipold, like, the overachievers, than it is, frankly, the guys who are is this just the latest guy to succeed at this blue blood school?
Before we finish, I do want to ask you, since it's the just missed the cut part, and I did reference these at the end, but you had two guys on there who've had one winning season. Is that too much recency bias? Like, I wasn't even for Dave Aranda and Mel Tucker. Like, I'm not even. I would consider Mel a year from now. I just think it's just not enough.
I think
of a
you're
body
reading
work.
Too much into this just missed group. It was more like it's more just to, like, show that they're on my mind. You know, like, they're ascending, and, like, Billy Napier's on my just missed.
Billy Napier's been a head
he's
coach
had some,
for a while,
a lot of success. Yeah.
I just think it's hard to evaluate. Like, again, we both love Dave Aranda. Dave has been there 2 years, and with the exception of Apu, most of those players were Matt Rhule guys. So he had one really down year as he took over, and one great year. but it's like such a small body of work. Like, I feel like,
well, that's why I ultimately couldn't justify including them. You know, it's interesting. I don't think we've ever done this before, but we were recording this before it actually gets published. Mm-hmm. So we don't yet know what the reader reaction is. It would not surprise me if the reaction, reader reaction, is more of, how can you not have Mel Tucker in there? How can you not have Dave Aranda? Dave Aranda just went 12-1 and won the Big East. And Mel Tucker,
Big,
you know,
East? The Big East?
The Big
East.
You 12,
had the tournament,
sorry,
on your head, man.
Yeah. Mel Tucker just took Michigan State to a New Year's Six win. I mean, I feel like I'm showing restraint.
No, you don't. You're just,
I mean, you don't think there's going to, people are going to be like, how can you have James Franklin in there after two dud seasons, but not Mel Tucker, who just won 11 games at Michigan State?
Because Mel Tucker, these are the, like, look, I like Mel Tucker. I feel like I've been beating the drum for Mel Tucker since he was at CU. Mel Tucker's first year at CU, 5-7. His second year at Michigan State, 2-5. This year, great year, 11-2. But we're talking about previously to that, his record was 7-12. It's just not enough body of work yet.
No, I know. Dave Aranda's only been a head coach for two seasons, and the first year was terrible. So that's why I can't put him in the top 25 yet, even though he is one of the five reigning Power 5 conference champions. Let's wrap it with this. You threw a game at me earlier I wasn't expecting. I'm going to throw one at you. I don't know which of your guys were not ranked last year. I had Gundy, which I'm really embarrassed why I didn't have him ranked going into the season, but Gundy comes on, Harbaugh, Mark Stoops, Dave Clawson, Kalani Sitake. Who is a coach who is not in either of our top 25s who you could see being on there a year from now?
I could see Mel Tucker after all that. Yeah. I just think he would have more time to be on there. I could definitely see Jamie Chadwell from Coastal. I think he's, you and I are both big fans of his.
He's got a big reload on his hands this year. If they have another double-digit win season, then he's a really good coach.
There's two that I want to throw out that are... One is Pat Narduzzi. Did you think of him?
Not really, because his friend is...
I remembered. We had this... We did have a podcast in the early part of last year
where
you flung him under the bus. Like, you
after they lost... Western Michigan.
Yeah, and the other one, I think, is Dana Holgorsen, who's a really good offensive coach. He just had a really excellent year, and he was pretty good at West Virginia. If he can sustain it there, I could see him being top 25.
Yeah, I agree with those. I'm trying to think of, because somebody who we wouldn't have already mentioned in the, you know, just missing the, like, I could say that Billy Napier comes in and has a really good first year at... did you ever consider Jeff Brohm?
I have in the past. It's weird because they went 9-4, and I feel like early in the podcast I was talking him up in regard to the offensive piece of this.
My answer to this question, by the way, is Sam Pittman, who I also... Too soon right now. But if he comes back next year and has, in his third year at Arkansas, if they go 9-3... I would think at that point I'd have to say, oh yeah, this guy's 125.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I feel like Sam Pittman, you know, it's not like Dave Aranda, because the first year was, you know, on paper not great, 3-7, although, you know, Arkansas was not, you know, Baylor, Matt Rhule got it going again in a big way, whereas Arkansas had been sputtering really bad. But I
mean, whatever Sam Pittman's record was the first year, everybody thought he did a great job because they were so terrible under...
Yeah, I thought Sam Pittman, that's been a terrific hire for Arkansas. So
yeah.
I know my rule is you have to have more than 3 years, but yeah, he's definitely should be on the radar. The one other name, and I know he was on mine at one point, I'm pretty sure he was on yours at least before, and that is Brian Harsin.
I don't see him. Are you saying he's going to be in the top 25 coaches a year from now? I think he's going to be in the top 25 coaching changes.
Okay.
I actually am kind of expecting to hear some...
Ralph Russo fire about Mack Brown?
No, I'm expecting to catch some... I'm expecting to catch some flack about not having Pittman in there this year.
It's only been 2 years. I mean, again, I think you kind of open yourself up by having those other guys in the just miss the cut section, because then it feels like you're considering them. You know, I think you're doing yourself a disservice.
Yeah.
By having
Did you
that.
Say you won't consider a guy until he's had 3 years?
Yeah.
Did you make an exception for Ryan Day?
Ryan Day has had a little more than 3 years, though. He was
no, but gone. I feel like you had to have had him in there
last year
after his second season.
No, I don't think I did.
Huh. Because I remember I remember writing specifically because people were expecting me to have him in there after 1 year. Like, no, it's got to be 2 years minimum.
Let me see what I did just while we're talking about this, because I thought that's what it was. No, I had him last year. He was 23-2, so it was more than. So I guess I have to have at least 2 years, at least more than 2 years.
Okay. All right. Well, if you still want to read the article after we basically revealed the whole thing, then some, go to theathletic.com/theaudible, because we have this fantastic promo right now for $1
by the way,
for 6 months.
So I have yo-yoed Whittingham, it looks like. I didn't realize I had him in my top 10 in 2020. And then he went from 9 to 12 to 8, I guess.
They were one of those teams that barely played in 2020. So, you know, you probably just kind of forgot about them that year.
By the way, I would be remiss if I saw it. There was a picture that I saw online. It was a recruiting-related picture that just, I can't unsee it. It was deep squat Gary Patterson in Texas gear. Have you seen it on
Yes, doing the hook'em sign.
Yeah.
It's so bizarre. The guy, I don't think it's a stretch to say, like, when he was the coach at TCU, that there was nothing he hated more. Nope, that's not true. He hated Baylor, but he also hated Texas.
Yeah. He's one of college football's smartest defensive coaches and certainly one of their great characters. It's still just like I couldn't stop looking at it, the picture. I mean, I think it was a little different if he was just standing straight up, but he was like kind of in a deep squat. It was like just...
Was this the ultimate sign? Like, I've always said that you know, college football fans who get really, you know, Oklahoma fans are going through this right now. They feel really, really burned when a coach changes jobs and kind of forget that, you know, this team is your passion, but for these guys, it's their employer and it's who pays their check. And they're not necessarily, you know, looking at it the same way you do. Is this the ultimate example of this? Is this basically like, well, now that he's getting his paychecks from the University of Texas, he has no reservations about flashing a hook'em sign?
I don't know. I mean, that guy did more for that program than just about anybody coaching in college football at their program, other than probably Saban. You know, there's a statue. He wouldn't have gotten him in that league. You know, he raised a ton of money. I mean, I don't think they would. I think most TCU fans would like roll with it, even if he got a hook'em tattooed on his chest.
Do you think he's grinning, bearing it through that part of it, or he's... First of all, I didn't realize that analysts, or whatever his role is, would take part in these recruiting photo shoots.
I think he, you know, I don't know. You'd have to ask him. I mean, we should ask him that question.
We should. I don't know. I'm trying to think if he is, like, just kind of sucking it up and doing it, or he's like, screw it, TCU fired me, I got no allegiance to them anymore. I'm full on Texas. Not,
yeah, Gary Patterson is not poker face Gary Patterson at all. He's not suck it up and do it guy, I don't think. So, I don't know. Somewhere along the way, somebody, I hope, is going to do an interesting story with him about
hint,
just because
hint, hint.
It is a unique situation.
Are you doing a hint, hint right now?
I am not doing a hint hit right now.
All right, you better get on it now that you've tipped off all of our colleagues.
Sam or Max are hustling.
All right. Well, no emails this week, but let's definitely do them next week. As always, you can send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. And for those of you like me who also care about basketball, at least for these 3 weeks in March, enjoy Selection Sunday. We'll see you next time.